As we seek to understand two things that happened in the days of Isaiah, two political points of crisis that he faced, the situation may seem far removed from us today. He deals with nations. Judah is dealing with Israel in the north and the Arameans and the people of Assyria, and the real brutal power is Assyria. Egypt is also mentioned. These nations are not players on the world stage today, or are not powerful as they once were. And what is the value of recording these lessons about these points of political crisis in the days of Isaiah? God is using these points of crisis in the days of the prophet to teach a lesson to all people of all time about trusting Him. And I do beg you to listen closely, to pay careful attention, but I do believe that you will find that if you do think closely with me as we go through this section, that this is very applicable to our lives. This is fundamental to our lives. Trust in the Lord with all our heart. Lean not in our own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge Him, and He will direct your path. Proverbs 3 in verses 5 and 6. In Isaiah 7, we are in the days of King Ahaz. Now, I put, and this is a bad way to start. I gave you the wrong dates for Ahaz. Not intentionally, there's a purpose for those dates. But the dates of his reign were probably about 735 to 715 B.C. It's hard to date the reign of Ahaz, and even more so the reign of his son Hezekiah, but 735 to 715. That's the time of his reign. This time of political crisis, however, is from 735 to 732. And this is what is called sometimes the Syro-Ephraimitic War. And what this was that Syria, or Aram, and some of your translations will have different things, Syria or Aram in the north, and Israel, who is the north of Judah, what they are doing is they are conspiring together, they are working together, and they're trying to withstand Assyria. Assyria, under their powerful king Tiglath-Pileser, has begun to flex their muscles. And these nations know, listen, the only way we're going to stand against Assyria is if we all stand together. And Aram says, yeah, we're on board. Israel says, we're on board. Judah doesn't join up with the alliance. And what Aram and Israel want to do is they want to come against Ahaz and force him to join their alliance against Assyria, or else remove him from the throne and set up another king who will. Now that is what's going on in this time in 735 to 732 B.C. And you notice that when this takes place, when Aram and Israel come against Judah, Judah is terrified. In verse 1, Ahaz is the son of Jotham, the son of Uzziah, king of Judah. Rezin is king of Aram, and Pekah, the son of Remaliah, is king of Israel. And they went up to Jerusalem to wage war against it, but they could not conquer it. When it was reported to the house of David, saying, the Arameans have camped in Ephraim, his heart, that's talking about the heart of Ahaz, his heart and the hearts of the people shook as the trees of the forest shake with the wind. That is a very dramatic way to say they were terrified. Their hearts shook as the trees of the forest shake with the wind. Aram and Israel joining forces against Judah. Ahaz is afraid. And Isaiah comes to meet him. In verse 3, I want you to make a mental note of the place where Ahaz meets Isaiah. Isaiah comes to meet him at the conduit of the upper pool on the highway of the Fuller's Field. Just remember that. But what he tells him is, you be calm. You trust in the Lord. That is what you need to do. In verse 4, it says, take care, be calm, have no fear, do not be faint-hearted. He states the plot of Aram and Ephraim in verses 5 and 6. They plan to do evil to you. They plan to remove you and to set the son of Tabeel over the throne of Judah. But said, do not fear, because God is going to bring them down. Their plan in verse 7 will not stand, nor will it come to pass. So Aram and Israel are coming against you, Judah, to try to get you to join this alliance against Assyria. But don't join this plan. Don't be afraid. You just trust in the Lord. You trust in the Lord. You put your confidence in Him, because their plan will not stand, nor shall it come to pass. And he says, I'm going to let you ask of the Lord a sign as high as the heavens or as deep as Sheol. You ask a sign. Ahaz says, I will not ask for a sign. I will not tempt the Lord. That may sound noble, but Ahaz doesn't want to be committed to have to obey the Lord when the Lord does the sign. Well, Isaiah says the Lord himself will give you a sign. And a virgin shall be with child, shall bear a son, and he shall call his name Emmanuel. And before he knows how to choose evil, refuse evil and choose good, the land whose two kings you dread will be forsaken. Now these two nations, Aram and Israel, coming against Judah to try to get them to join this alliance against Assyria. And Isaiah says, don't join that alliance. But he says to him something else. He says, do not send off to Assyria for help. Because if you send off to Assyria for help, they are going to do you more damage than these two nations ever could. And that's what's stated basically in verse 17, in verse 20. The most powerful nation in the world, Assyria. And he says, don't send off to them for help. Now what did Ahaz do? If you were faced with a crisis, and two nations stronger than you were coming against you, and you know Assyria has the military strength to meet this threat, would you do as the prophet told you? Would you trust in God? Or would you send off to another nation for help? I want you to look at 2 Kings 16. 2 Kings 16. I don't know how much you have studied this period of time and how much you've studied the book of Isaiah, but let me beg you to keep listening closely. I'll try to explain this all as clearly as I can. But 2 Kings 16 is the record of the reign of Ahaz, same king we're talking about from the book of Isaiah. And it also mentions the same king of Aram and the same king of Israel. You have Rezin and Pekah. Notice them in 2 Kings 16 and verse 5. And notice that they did some damage to Israel in verse 5 and 6. But they could not overcome them. But I want you particularly to notice verses 7 and 8. Ahaz sent messengers to Tiglath-Pileser, king of Assyria, saying, I am your servant and your son. Come up and deliver me from the hand of Aram and from the hand of the king of Israel who are rising against me. Ahaz took the silver and the gold that was found in the house of the Lord and the treasuries of the king's house, and he sent a present to the king of Assyria. So he sends a message to the king of Assyria. He sends a message to Tiglath-Pileser. That's not what Isaiah told him to do. But he does this. And I want you to notice that language he uses. I am your servant. I am your son. Deliver me or save me. Let me ask you a question. And I don't mind if you answer, though understand if I move on quickly, I know how it is when you have a gospel meeting in a Bible class. Some people who speak every week all of a sudden grow mute in a meeting. At least that's the way it is where I'm from. I don't know if that's the way it is here. Ahaz is on the throne of Judah. So he is a descendant of who?
David.
He is a descendant of David. Who should the son of David address with the words, I am your servant, I am your son? Who should he address those words to? God, absolutely. God. Do you know in 2 Samuel 17, when God makes promises to David, when God makes promises that I will be with you and I will be your descendants will reign after you, that David is spoken of as the Lord's servant something like 13 times in that passage? The only one to whom the king of Judah, David's descendant, ought to be saying, I am your servant, is to the God of heaven. I am your servant. I am your son. You remember those words of 2 Samuel 7? In 2 Samuel 7, God says to David, I will be a father to him. He will be a son to me. The point is, it should be that he utters these words to God. I am your servant. I am your son. He is saying things to the king of Assyria that he should have only been saying to God. And notice that word in 2 Kings chapter 16, verse 7. 2 Kings 16, verse 7. The word deliver. Some of your translations may have the word deliver there. Some of your translations may have the word save. Do you know what the name Isaiah means? Now, I know this well because I have a son named Isaiah. The name Isaiah means the Lord is salvation. The Lord is salvation. That was the prophet's name. That was the prophet's message. Do you know the word that's used here and translated deliver takes a part of Isaiah's name? He says to the king of Assyria, the king of Judah saying to the king of Assyria, I am your servant. I am your son. Words he should have only uttered to God. Save me. Deliver me. Who is our Savior? Who is our deliverer? It is not the king of Assyria. It is the Lord God of heaven. Words that he should have only uttered to God. Save me, deliver me. He begs the king of Assyria to save him or deliver him. And not content with those words. Notice in verse 8, he took silver and gold out of the Lord's house, out of a house devoted to God's name, and he sent them to the king of Assyria. He is taking riches out of the house of the Lord, the one he should be trusting. And he's putting his trust and his confidence in the king of Assyria. And he says, save me and deliver me. Second Chronicles 28 talks about this same time. And it tells us that he sent to the king of Assyria for help. But it did not help. Isaiah told him it wouldn't. Isaiah said it's not going to help. But he didn't listen. It didn't help. Now my guess is that nobody here has ever been a king. I may be wrong about that. But that's my guess. And my guess is that none of you have trembled worrying about what the nations of Aram and Israel are going to do to you, or have cast your allegiance to the king of Assyria. But let me ask you this. When times of crisis come in your life, where do you look for help? When you or someone you love gets terrifying news at the doctor's office, where do you look to for help? When your job is downsizing and you are the odd man out, where do you look for help? When our world is falling apart and wrong is exalted and right is mocked, where do you look to? For help. Through this political crisis, God is teaching a lesson for all people of all time that we must put our trust, we must put our confidence in the Lord God of heaven. All other ground is sinking sand. You're not going to be able to solve problems by the force of your own personality. You're not going to be able to solve problems by your strength and cunning. And you're not going to be able to solve your problems by even calling up all your Christian friends and pouring out your heart to them. You may ask them to pray to God for you. I'm not minimizing that, but I'm saying sometimes we run and tell our problem to some other person who is powerless to help before we take our problems to God. That's what I'm saying. But this isn't the only political crisis faced in the days of Isaiah the prophet. There was another political crisis in the days of his son, Hezekiah. Hezekiah is the son of Ahaz. The dates of Hezekiah are difficult to establish. There are a couple of factors that are hard to work in. I am going to tentatively give those dates, 715 to 681. But this particular chapter deals with an invasion of Sennacherib that takes place in the 14th year of Hezekiah. Now, Assyria is the most powerful nation in the world. Isaiah warned Ahaz, if you send off to Assyria for help, instead of trusting in God, they're going to do you more damage than they will ever do you good. And this really comes home to roost in the time of his son Hezekiah. Now, I think that's a lesson to us. If we do the wrong thing now, we may make life tremendously more difficult for our children who come after us. Look at Isaiah 36 and 37. And I want you to notice in verse 1, Sennacherib had come up against the fortified cities of Judah and seized them. Do you know that archaeologists have found records of King Sennacherib? And Sennacherib mentions in his own records that he captured 46 cities of Judah. So he bears testimony to the same thing we see here. He captured 46 cities of Judah, he said. Here the text tells us that he comes up and captures the fortified cities of Judah. So much of the kingdom of Hezekiah has already been conquered. But I want you to notice in verse 2, the king of Assyria sent the Rabshakeh from Lachish to Jerusalem with a large army, and he stood by the conduit of the upper pool on the highway of the Fuller's Field. Does that place sound familiar to anyone? It's the same place, remember back in 7:3, it's the same place where Isaiah met Ahaz to deliver this message of trust in God. Don't join this anti-Assyrian alliance. Don't send off to Assyria for help. You just trust in God. Ahaz didn't do it. And now, some of the military men under King Sennacherib, king of Assyria, some of his military men come and meet men of Hezekiah, the son of Ahaz, at that very same place to threaten him and to engage in psychological warfare. Now, what happens is he is trying to get Hezekiah and all the people of Jerusalem to go ahead and surrender to them, the Assyrians, where he doesn't have to defeat them in battle. But as he comes against them, he says, why are you rebelling against me? And what plan, what counsel do you have? You could pick the worst professional football team that is out there. Probably, unfortunately, the Titans, but you pick the worst professional team. And you could take, let's say we picked the best 22 from this group, best 22 football players, and we have a game against them on national TV. Do the best here have a chance against those worst? Well, we know the answer to that. You know, Titans quarterback may not be much, but I'd rather have him at quarterback than Kyle Polk at quarterback. It's just, that's what I'd say. And the point I'm trying to make, it is that much of a mismatch for Judah to stand against Assyria. And Judah is trying to get, and Assyria is trying to get Judah to surrender quickly. And in the midst of this problem, Hezekiah did what I know I've done sometimes. That we face a crisis, and you make sure to check all your resources, to cross all your T's and dot all your I's. You make sure that everything's carefully done, and you forget all about God. And that's what Hezekiah did at first. Hezekiah saw Sennacherib coming, and one of the first things he did, he made sure his defenses were strengthened. Look in Isaiah 22. Isaiah 22, verse 8 through 11. This is talking about Hezekiah's frantic response. His frantic response when he sees Assyria coming. It says, he removed the defense of Judah. In that day, you depended on the weapons of the house of the forest. You saw the breaches in the wall of the city of David were many. You collected the waters of the lower pool. You counted the houses of Jerusalem and tore down the houses to fortify the wall. You made a reservoir between the two walls for the waters of the old pool. But you did not depend on him who made it, nor did you take into consideration him who planned it long ago. Some of you may have read in archaeology about Hezekiah's water tunnels. If you haven't, let me encourage you sometime this afternoon or tonight to look those up. And it's a fascinating thing as watchmen began digging on one side and digging on the other, and they met in the middle. And where they met in the middle, they made an inscription, which was only discovered around 100 years ago or so. And this inscription talked about what was done in digging this tunnel. But it seems like what Hezekiah did is what a nation would do when they were engaging in battle. For example, a nation wants to capture Jerusalem. They would lay siege to the city. And when they besiege the city, that means the army camps around the city. And they will not let any supplies inside the city. They will not let any supplies out, and they will not let any supplies in and any people out unless those people surrender. And they just simply wait there and starve them out. And Hezekiah wanted to make sure that the people had plenty of water if the Assyrians laid siege. And so there's a spring outside Jerusalem, and this water tunnel may have brought in water from outside the city, inside the city, in time of siege. But the point I'm trying to make, Hezekiah was frantic with preparation. He was doing everything he could to meet the situation. And notice the language it's used in verse 8. You depended on the weapons of the house of the forest. But in verse 11, you did not depend on him who made it. Does this passage say it was wrong for Hezekiah to make those tunnels? Not necessarily. But I'll tell you what's wrong. What's wrong is to make those tunnels and to forget all about the God who is the maker of heaven and earth. Is it wrong to go to the doctor when we're sick? No. You see, the book of Proverbs tells us about the good of medicine. The one who actually wrote more words of the New Testament than any other was a physician, a doctor, Luke. And Paul speaks of him as the beloved physician in Colossians 4, verse 14. No, it's not wrong. Of course it's not wrong. But I'll tell you what we can't do. We can't put our trust simply in those skilled people and forget about God. Do you remember Asa, the king of Judah, in 2 Chronicles 16, verse 12, that he was diseased in his feet, yet even in his disease he did not trust in God, but the physicians? The point is that sometimes Hezekiah does what I know I've done many times before, is we have a crisis coming, we see a difficulty arising, we try to make plans, we're busy here and there with all kinds of even good activity and legitimate activity, but we forget that we are totally dependent upon God. And that's what Hezekiah did. Now, another thing Hezekiah did that was absolutely wrong. He trusted in Egypt and sent off to Egypt for help instead of trusting in God. In Isaiah 30, verse 1, "Woe to the rebellious children, declares the Lord, who execute a plan, but not mine, who make an alliance, but not of my spirit, in order to add sin to sin, who proceed down to Egypt without consulting me, to take refuge in the safety of Pharaoh, to seek shelter in the shadow of Egypt. Therefore, the safety of Pharaoh will be your shame, and the shelter of Egypt your humiliation." This language, "you have taken refuge in Pharaoh," it's often used of taking refuge in God. The statement that "you have sought shelter in the shadow of Egypt" is sometimes used to talk about seeking shelter under the shadow of the Almighty in Psalms 91. The point is language that should have been used to describe their trust of God is used to describe their trust in Egypt. They take refuge in the safety of Pharaoh. They seek in the shadow of Egypt. They should have been seeking these things in God, seeking, taking refuge in Him, seeking shelter under His wings. In Isaiah 31, verse 1, "Woe to those who go down to Egypt for help, who rely on horses, who trust in chariots because they are many, and in horsemen because they are few. But they do not look to the Holy One of Israel, nor seek the Lord." In verse 3, "The Egyptians are men and not God, and their horses are flesh and not spirit. So the Lord will stretch out His hand. He who helps will stumble, and he who is helped will fall." Again, the point is, it's wrong to send off to Egypt for help. It is wrong to put your confidence in them. Isaiah preaches that message. Hezekiah is slow to listen. But ultimately, Hezekiah does put his trust in God. If we go back to Isaiah 36, and let me encourage you to do this. Let me encourage you to read these texts, to read them, to become familiar with them, and to make them your own. A better job could be done telling the story than I'm doing. But the point to understand what it teaches about trust in God. And when the king of Assyria sends his military men to meet the men of Hezekiah at the conduit of the upper pool, at the highway of the fuller's field, Assyria is mocking Judah. He mocks Judah. "You're going to send off to Egypt for help? Egypt is a bruised reed, which if you lean on will pierce your hand." Interestingly, Ezekiel said the same thing about Egypt. So what he says is right. The king of Assyria mocks Israel. "On whom are you depending that you are rebelling against me? Are you depending on Egypt? Egypt is a bruised reed that if you lean on will hurt your hand." And he says, "Listen, if I spotted you 2,000 horses, you don't have enough men to put riders on them. Why in the world are you sending off to Egypt for horses, thinking that's going to help you, when if I gave you 2,000 horses, you don't have enough riders to put on them? You are foolish for trusting in Egypt. Don't trust in Egypt. Don't trust in Hezekiah. Don't let Hezekiah deceive you, saying he will deliver you." In verse 14, "Assyria mocks Judah for trusting in Hezekiah, for trusting in Egypt." And all they said there was right, but this is where they make a mistake. Assyria mocks Judah for trusting in God. In verse 7 of Isaiah 36, if you say to me, we trust in the Lord our God, is it not He whose high places and altars Hezekiah has taken away and has said to Judah and Jerusalem, you shall worship before this altar? He doesn't understand that that's a good thing and not a bad thing. But in verse 10, he states, do you think I've come up without the Lord's approval to destroy this land? The Lord told me, go up against this land and destroy it. If we had more time, we could talk about that more extensively. But I want you particularly to look at verses 18 through 20. And then we're going to read in chapter 37, verses 10 through 13. In Isaiah 36, verse 18 through 20, the king of Assyria sends his messengers to mock the people of Judah for putting their trust in God. Beware that Hezekiah does not mislead you, saying, the Lord will deliver us. Has any one of the gods of the nations delivered his land from the hand of the king of Assyria? Where are the gods of Hamath and Arphad? Where are the gods of Sepharvaim? Have they delivered Samaria from my hand? Who among all the gods of these lands has delivered their land from my hand that the Lord would deliver Jerusalem from my hand? You think your God's going to deliver you? That's what everybody else thinks. Your God's not going to deliver you. He's not going to rescue you. He repeats this insult in 37, begin with verse 11. Behold, you have heard what the king of Assyria have done to all lands, destroying them completely. So will you be spared? Did the gods of those nations which my fathers have destroyed deliver them? Even Gozan and Haran and Rezeph and the sons of Eden, who were in Telazar? Who is the king of Hamath, the king of Arpad, the king of Sepharvaim, and of Hena, and Iva? The point is, listen, we have conquered everybody else. We have defeated everybody else. All these other nations boasted their God was going to deliver them, and their God was not able to deliver them. You're not going to be any different. If you are Hezekiah, and 46 of your cities have already fallen to the Assyrians, would it be easy to trust God? One of the cities that the Assyrians defeated at this time was the Judean city of Lachish. Archaeologists have found a pit in Lachish of some 1,500 bodies where their heads were severed and were cast. In 701 B.C., and Hezekiah would have known this, in his own nation, those who resisted Assyria were killed in brutal fashion and were held up for mockery. How easy is it going to be when your life and your whole kingdom is at stake? How easy is it going to be to just trust God, to put your confidence in Him? But that is exactly what Hezekiah does. Hezekiah puts his trust in God. He took the letter the king of Assyria had written to him, mocking him for trusting in God. And he went and he prayed. He went and read it before the Lord and prayed to the Lord in Isaiah 37. Notice beginning with verse 16. O Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, who is enthroned above the cherubim, You are the God, you alone, of all the kingdoms of the earth. You have made heaven and earth. Incline your ear, O Lord, and hear. Open your eyes, O Lord, and see. And listen to all the words of Sennacherib, who sent them to reproach the living God. Truly, O Lord, the kings of Assyria have devastated all the countries in their lands and have cast their gods into the fire. For their gods are not gods, but the work of man's hands, wood and stone. So they have destroyed them. Now, O our God, O Lord our God, deliver us from his hand, that all the kingdoms of the earth may know that you alone, O Lord, are God. What the king of Assyria says is true, O Lord. They have defeated other nations. They have cast their gods in the fire. But their gods are not God. Their gods are wood and stone. Their gods are the creation of man's hands. You created the heavens and the earth. You deliver us and show all kingdoms and all peoples and all nations of the earth that you are God. And when the most powerful army in the world was camped outside of Jerusalem, waiting to destroy it, outside the city of Jerusalem, waiting to destroy it, an angel of the Lord came in that night and killed 185,000 Assyrians. Our God is able to deliver. He is worthy of our trust. In these political situations, remind us that the Lord is worthy of our trust. To put your trust in your riches, to put your trust in whatever else it may be, is to put your trust in sinking sand. But to put your trust in Him is to put your trust in the sure foundation that will not be shaken. At the end of this chapter, I don't have this represented on the board, but what's fascinating, Sennacherib is killed. That doesn't happen until about 20 years later. But he is killed by his son. And you know where he is when he's killed? He's killed in the temple of his God. His God could not protect him in his own temple. Hezekiah's God could protect and deliver him against the mightiest nation in the world. That is the God that we preach about, that we encourage you to put your trust in. Thank you.